everyone. My name is Stephen Jimenez, and I'd like to welcome you all to our radio documentary series, Teenage Kicks. In this episode, we'll discuss the topic of drugs. Since the 1980s, drugs have flooded the Irish streets, in both cities and rural areas. In this episode of the documentary, I'm going to try and understand why drugs are such a big problem and why they affect so many young people throughout the country. To get a better understanding of how drugs became a thing in Ireland, I spoke to Eddie Naughton, an outspoken critic and author on the drugs history in Ireland. Eddie, welcome to the show. Could you first explain to us who you are and what it is you do?
My name is Eddie Naughton, and I'm retired, and I write plays in my spare time. And I'm currently engaged in completing a trilogy of plays about the drugs problem in the Liberties area of Dublin. One is set from the point of view of the male addicts, the other is set from the point of view of the female addict, and the last is set from the point of view of the gangster, the drugs baron, if you like. And I'm almost completed that, and hopefully it'll be... as the year, in the autumn or something, we'll see it on the stage.
And Eddie, I'm aware you've been living in the Liberties area for most of your life. Could you just give us a wee bit of a backstory, I suppose, into pre-drugs Ireland and then the post-drugs Ireland?
Well, I've lived in Liberties with my family, and I think, as everybody knows, the drug problem in Dublin started out in the Liberties. I think it was Jesus Gardens and, to a lesser extent, Fatima Manchis, which are no longer there. From my point of view at the time, I think if the authorities had moved to nip it in the bud rather than look at it as a localised working class problem and stuck in a flatland type, they could have curtailed it. I'm not saying they would have prevented it entirely, but they really could have made it more difficult to take the hold that it's taken. And now it's just endemic. It's like discussing the weather in the morning with people. And since that time, I'd say upwards of 2,000 people have died in the Liberties alone, indirectly or directly through drugs, whether through overdosing, AIDS, murder, suicides, easily that. And all of these people have between the ages of 16 and 25. It's a horrendous statistic, you know.
And Eddie, I'm aware you've wrote a book about your experiences in the Liberties called Chasing Dragons. Could you tell us a wee bit about that, please?
Well, that's just what I'm talking about. The term chasing dragons comes from chasing the dragon, a drug term. But it's about the Liberties community, the collapse of the Liberties community under the drugs onslaught. And it's localised to one particular group of people. A couple of addicts and one particular family representing the community. The Liberties community at one time was a thriving community under tenants' associations, residents' associations. It was a fabulous place to live. It still is a fabulous place to live. But all these associations have just been crushed under the onslaught of drugs, heroin in particular. And so I wanted to leave a record, if you like, you know. But I think it's quite a good read if anyone really wanted to know what was going on at Liberties in the 1980s. Chasing Dragons is not a bad book.
Just looking back at the start of the drugs problem in Dublin, and I suppose what I would like to ask you is really, what were your emotions at the time of it?
I think it begins with fear. At the time, fear that your kids would grow up into this, where the authorities didn't seem to have a handle on what was going on in the area. There was kids from really good families succumbing to this. The crime rate was rose. Houses were being broken into, burglars destroyed for want of the means to buy heroin. And it was fearful trying to raise kids in that environment. And I don't think there's a family in the Liberties area that wasn't touched by it or doesn't know somebody that was touched by it in some way or another. It's destructive on a horrendous basis. It just became acceptable. But in my opinion, looking back, the authorities have an awful lot to answer for. Really have a lot to answer for. We had one of the biggest police stations in Dublin, 300 metres from the centre of where all that heroin was being dealt and used and abused. And it might as well have been a turf depot. There was a family living next door to me, and they were wiped out by the AIDS. The AIDS problem was rife at the time in the 80s, in the 90s, as you know. And they were all using contaminated needles. And they were just getting wiped out. The churches, it was like conveyor belts coming out of the churches with young bodies over the decades. It was really horrible. And not just horrible, it's absolutely disgraceful that society could stand by and allow that to happen and not move on it, crack down on it. It's not my place to say what they should have done, but they should have done something rather than just look on, which is what they seemed to be doing at the time. The funny thing was, there was a rise of the concerned parents grouping at the time, who were very much anti-RDA. Now, they had a lot to be anti-RDA about, in fairness. The system of saying, don't deal with the Gardaí, we'll deal with it ourselves, we're pushing them out from Fatima down to Oliver Bond and pushing them from Oliver Bond over to the north side of the city. And it was impossible to police. Literally impossible. And it was bound to fail, and it did fail, but... I think the concerned parents at the time, well, they were motivated by the very best of reasons. They were misguided. They should have been demonstrating outside the police stations for action to be taken by the police rather than keep the police out, you know, and allow the users. I mean, they had some small successes, there's no doubt about that, but that's all it was small success. Look at the drug problem now. But it's like when the sun comes up in the morning, you know, it's there, and the drug problem is there, and it's going to be there forevermore. So I used to think that one time it was heresy to say this, but I think the only way out of it is to legalise it, you know, and take the criminality out of it altogether. You know? Probably you would have to deal with that, you know, because there's always somebody chasing a beer or hide, and they got before, like, but they can start with that, heroin and cocaine. I don't know anybody who's not using it. I mean, kids shouting each other, like, you know, at the weekend, I hear them, like, you know, it used to be us saying, you're going for a pint, and now it's a hell about a few lines, and I'll see you later for a few lines, you know.
Do you think that the problem itself has changed for the better or worse?
I think it's probably worse, you know. I think probably there's more heroin that is in Dublin now than there ever was. There's more centres treating them. You could walk through the Liberties up from through Christchurch, High Street, Thomas Street, Mead Street, under the Coombe, and heading up towards the old Fatima and that. And you'll see that the poor unfortunates, the walking dead, if you like, out looking to score, you know. That's it. It's frightening, you know. As I said, like... I think legalising is probably the only way. Like, otherwise, we see the killing that's going on, like the between the gangs. I mean, we're in danger of getting like Mexico if we don't do something, you know. Rather than just we tend to be reacting to stuff rather than putting in preventative measures. They seem to be concentrated. Well, where the problem is working class areas, but I mean, people have enough to contend with, I think. You know, I think they could spread that out a bit more. Like, I mean, definitely it's needed. Unquestionably it's needed, you know. You can't, passing dirty needles around to each other. Like. But I think properly resourced centres in different areas, not just concentrated in the city centre, which is, they're coming from everywhere to avail of that, like, you know. It upsets a lot of people. I mean, probably rightly so.
Right now, here at the time of us having this interview, the government are proposing to open injecting centres. What are your thoughts on that? Are they a good idea?
I do think it's a good idea, but like I said, with the needle exchange, that should be located in the centres of the suburb where the kids are. Like, instead of having everyone travelling to the one area, it's a recipe for disaster. It's a recipe for keeping people in prison in their homes when they see that the hordes descending like this. It is a good idea, but I just don't think that... I think it's just... They're trying to localise in one area of Dublin, and then they'll do what they normally do, and they'll forget about it. And whatever the consequences of that are, they'll just walk away from it.
From my interview with Eddie, it was clear that the topic of drugs was one that he was very passionate about and that had affected him personally. Following this interview, I wanted to find out what was happening at government level, so I met with Lao TD and President of Sinn Féin, Gerry Adams, to find out what his policies were on drugs and what he felt had to be done to tackle the problem.
In terms of the use of illegal substances, there needs to be adequate resources given to an Garda Síochána. and also adequate resources given to the services which will help people. I meet many people who are drug abusers and drug users who want off it, but because it's such an addictive habit, they can't do it on their own. They need help and support, and Sinn Féin and our alternative budget wanted to put in 1.88 million into 15 new Garda youth diversion projects. There's a need to fund adequately a national drugs strategy to make sure it's truly national, that there's North-South collaboration on all of this.
Does Dundalk have a drug problem?
Yes. Everywhere in the island of Ireland has a drug problem. If by that you mean illegal drugs and people using illegal substances, that's a huge problem. I remember, and I was very active in the anti-drugs movement. I didn't live in Dublin, but I was there during, particularly in the north inner city. And it always struck me as very sad that these streets, which are within the stone's throw of the GPO, and this is where Michael Collins drew his active service units in Birminghamshire Street and Buckinghamshire Street and Sheriff Street and Sean McDermott Street, that they would be so riddled with deaths. There were more people died from drug abuse in that awful period than died in any similar neighbourhood in the north in the course of 30 years of conflict. And some families, three or four siblings or both parents or parents and a child, teenage children, died. It was just a total and absolute disgrace that was allowed to happen. So it needs a multi-agency strategy. It needs, of course, the guards. It needs them to have the proper resources and the anti-drug squads to have the proper resources. But it also needs proper therapeutic services for addicts, and those who run these drugs need to be tackled head on.
We are aware that you visited the Ardalgan complex on Quay Street in Dundalk. Could you just give us a bit of an input about what you saw at the actual complex and what you think should be done with it?
Well, Jennifer Green has championed this whole campaign. I went into the complex a few times because the neighbours were complaining quite rightly about the place being open to use and abuse by drug users and others. And, you know, the temptation, I suppose, is to blame the addicts. The problem is that we spent perhaps a year, and Jennifer Green spent longer, trying to get the council even to own up to who owned the place and who was responsible for it, and so on. It's one of those products of the Celtic Tiger, where clearly planning and other regulations were ignored and this dreadful slum was built. I understand it's been demolished, and I understand that it's going to be replaced. In the meantime, the onus is on the council to secure it and to make sure that no one, I mean, the people going into it are in danger. I've been through the building myself, and it's in a state of considerable risk to anyone in it, and particularly if someone is intoxicated or is using drugs. So that there's a responsibility to secure it in the meantime and to get it replaced as quickly as possible.
From my interview with Deputy Adams, it was clear he was also very passionate about this topic of drugs. The Ardalgan complex was rife, and following the release of a video by two youths on YouTube who gained access into the complex and were able to pick out all the drug paraphernalia, it's clear that something must be done. Next, I interviewed manager of the Dundalk Youth Centre, Kevin Moran. Kevin works on the front line with youths, and throughout his career, he has seen his fair share of drug abuse by young people. What types of drugs are young people using?
I'd say mostly young people would be using cannabis in the form of weed. And the other drugs then would be kind of like prescription drugs that they're buying on the black market. So these things would be the likes of the Xanaxes, the benzodiazepines, that sort of stuff. All very easily available, very cheap and very accessible.
And it's widely known that drugs become available to young people as they grow in their late teens. From your experience as a youth leader, what has been the most daunting incidents or experiences that you've had to deal with?
Well, we've had a number of young people who would have been regular users of the service who come in and play games of pool every day, and they may have been in a position where they've got in serious trouble with drugs, and they arrived at the centre completely off their heads on either tablets or weed or the ill effects of those drugs, and we've then been in a position to connect them up with medical care, with services to support them, and counselling services afterwards.
And Kevin, do you believe that secondary schools should educate their students more on the use and the sale or supply of drugs?
I think that it's everybody's responsibility to make young people aware of the issues and dangers around drugs. I think that one of the problems is that there's probably drugs available in every secondary school around town if you looked hard enough for them. And I think that we need to take a broader approach to parents, teachers, schools, youth services, the guards, about how to try and curb the supply of drugs, and also just to make young people more aware of the dangers that are involved in drugs.
From speaking to Kevin, it was clear that the drug problem itself in Dundalk had touched him right at the heart. To get a better understanding of what it's like to have a problem with drugs, I caught up with a man who goes around the different schools in Dundalk talking about his past experiences. He is now a drugs counsellor. His name is Mark. Mark, welcome to the show. Could you first explain to us who you are and tell us a wee bit about your story?
Hey, Stephen. My name is Mark. In relation to substance misuse, I started off very young with solvents. I think it was 10 or 11. No particular reason why to do this. It was just out of curiosity on my behalf. And from solvents, it progressed on to alcohol. Around 12, 13, drinking alcohol and smoking hash at the time. Done that for a few years. And it progressed on to heroin. At the age of around 15, 16, I was an early school leaver. Didn't like school at all. I was preoccupied with the streets and what was going on the streets more so than with school and education. I didn't take to it at all.
Why did you move on to the harder drugs? Was it to do with the people you were hanging around with, or curiosity on your own part?
I'd say it was probably a little bit of both. The people I grew up with would have been probably singing off the same hymn sheet as myself. Be curious what this does to you. And the curiosity as well was like, oh, I wonder what this is like, you know. So like, I didn't just do it by myself. There was with peers, like there was five or six of us that would go off and buy a tin of glue or tin of gas that you fill your lighter with, that gas, and we'd sniff it, or we'd buy a gallon of petrol and sniff the petrol and starting off. So like, it was just curiosity, and I know it's different for everybody. Other people have other reasons, from trauma or things that might have happened in their lives, and sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, stuff like that. But for me, it was just pure curiosity.
And Mark, from being here with me now, I assume there came a time in your life where you decided that this sort of scene wasn't for you anymore. Could you tell us a wee bit, I suppose, about why and when you decided to stop, and how hard that experience was for you?
With the solvents or in general?
In general.
Well, I went from solvents and I worked my way up to heroin. So I was taking heroin for 23 and a half years. And through, I'd say, the last 14 years of that using, I've been in and out of treatment centres. I wanted to stop, but in my heart, I wanted to stop. Like, I knew it was wrong, but my head was saying, I'll stop tomorrow, I'll do it tomorrow, and tomorrow never came. What made me decide to stop was I got into a physical fight one time in my area, and the guy I was fighting is one of my own peers, and he ended up in a coma, and he was left physically paralysed on one side, and I knew I was brought up differently than that to inflict that kind of a on somebody. So I was like, that's it. I've had enough. I've thrown the towel in now. This is not for me. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired and behaving in a way that would get myself into trouble, either through crime or through violence. So that was my kind of rock bottom. And I haven't looked back since. That was 15 years ago.
Would you have any advice for the young people of today who either are caught up in the drug problem or have thought of experimenting with drugs? And do you see any differences in today's world of buying or getting drugs rather than when you were younger?
When I was growing up, trying to get drugs was difficult. You had to know somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody. But that, obviously, throughout the years, got easier. The availability, you can get buy drugs online. It used to be either in Dublin, Limerick, Athlone, or some other county, and now it's like widespread all over Ireland. And the advice I would give to young people is get educated on the drug. See what it does to you, the long term, the short term, and the immediate effects and how it affects the body. I think education is the way forward. Of course, I'd say technically never take a drug, but let's be real here. Young children, young adults are going to take, teenagers, they're going to try a drug. If you're going to take an ecstasy tablet, don't take a full one. Take a half of one first and see what the effect is like. Don't take two at a time. I've seen it happen. I've experienced it with a young person taking two tablets at a time and hitting the deck, his heart burst, and ending up on a machine in James Hospital. So technically, don't take a drug. If you have a problem with it, go and speak to somebody who you feel safe with. There's a drug site on the internet called drugs.ie where nobody can see it, but you can actually seek advice on that. There's like a thing on a Facebook, a messenger where you can talk to somebody, but they will direct you to your local addiction services, which there isn't too many around, I don't think, up in Drogheda or Dundalk or around this area. I'm not too sure about that, but like in Dublin there's lots. So just seek the advice, find out what the drug does to you and how it affects you, because like people think that I was talking earlier to a bunch of young people, and your brain growing up between the age of 10 and 25 is developing, and your brain is like a big chandelier, bright shiny chandelier, and before you ever take a drink or a drug and you turn that switch, the chandelier, all the bulbs light up shiny, and you're taking everything that you're being taught. When you start to self-medicate with weed, E, coke, whatever, MDMA, whatever the drug is, when you turn that light on again, them bulbs are gone now, and they're brain cells. And what happens? The brain shrinks. So long-term use can have an effect of mental health, ending up in mental institutions, schizophrenia, that kind of stuff. So I don't think your voice is out there for the young people. I think drugs education should be brought into schools. I think they should be educated in on the facts and not the myths.
Do you think the government is doing enough?
I think the government could do more.
In what way?
Finance and expertise, because like there's where I am from, there's addiction services, but they're like in the 80s it was all heroin and opiates. And if I'm working with a young person, or they won't, I'm not going to that service, they're for drunkies. So I think there should be service for young adults from 15 up to 24, specifically for poly drug use. And poly drug use is somebody, some young person using alcohol, snorting coke, smoking weed, all on same at one weekend.
Mark, thank you very much. You've spoken very well. And I'd just like to ask you as well, how do you feel that the young people here today reacted to your delivery at this workshop?
Thanks, Stephen. They were great. I just kind of left the space for them after class and said, look, if any of you have been touched by what was said today or affected, please stay back and have a chat with myself and the two lads. And a good few of them stayed back and had a talk with us, which was great. So we just gave them we just suggested a few things, gave them where they might be able to go for to seek support.
From speaking to Mark, it was clear that his story had touched many in the last number of years. Following my interview with Mark, I wanted to speak to another woman very active in the area of adolescent substance abuse and trying her very best to prevent it. Samantha Tedder from Information and Education Programmes is responsible for organising TY students from each of the schools in Dundalk and surrounding areas to return and teach the first years about drug abuse. This programme is known as the Peer Education Programme. Do you think that it's easier or harder now for young people to acquire drugs?
I don't know if there's an improvement. I would say it's a lot harder for young people nowadays because there is so much more availability of drugs. Whereas before it was their friend giving it to them or their dealer or whatever. Now it's available on the internet and so freely available, I would say.
What do you think of the substance abuse policy in schools?
The policy itself, to me, it doesn't involve the young people enough. Every school that we work with, we ask to see their substance use policy, which sometimes can be a bit of an issue. Sometimes even the school's unhappy to give it out, and we have to ring the schools and say the transition year students need the policy as part of the programme. I think there should be more involvement on the young people with the development of policies, etc.
Do you think that the substance abuse policy in schools should be put into young people's journals?
As I said earlier, I think the young people themselves need to be involved in the whole process of how a policy is developed, but they also need to have the knowledge of what's in their actual policies, because that can be a problem as well. They don't know what the rules, etc. are. And yes, I do think there needs to be something in their journals. A lot of journals, though, do have information about drugs in them, which is great to see. The knowledge is there, but it's just whether they act upon it or not.
From speaking to Samantha, it was clear that she was also very passionate about this topic. The following audio clip consists of two role plays recorded by the TYs who were involved in producing part of this documentary. The events which you are now about to hear are 100% fiction and did not affect any young people in the production of this episode of the documentary series.
Hey, my mate gave me some ecstasy if you want to take some before we head out tonight.
I know, sir, I've heard bad things about them.
Come on, there's so many to choose from. He gave me loads. I've got one of a Facebook logo, there's even an emoji, and I think this one is supposed to be a dog.
No, trust me, I'm grand.
Oh, come on, why not? Everyone takes them now.
If you were my friend, you wouldn't be pressuring me to take one.
Fine, suit yourself then.
Are you alright? What happened?
I can't remember.
Did you take something?
I think I took something green.
Was it a pill or powder or what?
A pill, I think.
How do you feel?
My heart is racing and I'm sweating and really thirsty.
Okay, I'm taking you to the hospital and I'll ring your mum on the way. We can meet her there. Can you walk or should we take a taxi?
Yeah, just help me up.
The following is a panel discussion from our TY students who attended the documentary workshops at Dundalk FM. They are not named to protect their identities and to keep their opinions classified. Why do you think people take drugs?
I feel like people take drugs for a lot of different reasons. Some would use it as escape from personal issues and they just like to kind of disconnect for a while. While other people, I feel like they can accidentally get into it. They can start off with the drinking and then, they can take something once and then they get hooked on it. Sometimes be given it without even knowing what they've taken.
Yeah, I agree. They might be pressured into it when they're younger and then get addicted to it and don't even realise it.
Is it a big problem in your area?
In our area, I'd say so. Because you'd know, it's kind of easy to know who you could get drugs off if you were looking for them and what would be available.
Yeah, in our area, yeah, because you hear incidents happening from the cause of drugs and stuff like that.
What do you think should be done?
I don't know, like, there should be a tight or, like, restriction on them, like, being sold as well, and, like, parents stopping, stuff like that.
Yeah, I agree, because, you can do as much as you can in your power to stop people taking drugs, but there will always be people who will slip through those cracks. So I feel like you'd be better off trying to put more awareness and, let people know, everything that can go wrong with taking drugs. And if they do decide to take the drugs, you know that they knew what they were doing with themselves.
It's clear from the views of all the contributors in this episode of our documentary that drugs are a major problem on the island of Ireland. I would hope that you at home have been more educated on the problems with drugs, why people use them, and if you were ever involved or caught up in the scene of drugs, that you will be able to go and speak to someone and get the help or advice that you need. It's bye from me, Stephen Jimenez. We'll be back with another documentary very soon.
You've been listening to Teenage Kicks, presented by Stephen Jimenez, sound engineer Paul O'Neill, production supervisors Mr. John Englishby and Dr. Alison Lennon. We would like to thank all the young people who took part in the documentary. We'd also like to thank the contributors in order of appearance: Eddie Naughton, Jerry Adams TD, Kevin Moran Dundalk Youth Centre, Mark, a recovering drug addict, and Samantha Heather, information and education programmes. This programme has been funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland, with many thanks to Dundalk FM.